Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it's 5:08 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is June 29th. I thought I'd kick off today with this chart of the COVID cases in India, because back in May and early June, there was nothing but these dire headlines about the exponential growth in the number of cases for COVID-19. And subsequently, the number has collapsed, and this is equally true of the number of deaths. So we don't hear a lot about that. We certainly saw lots of news headlines about how terrible the conditions were in India, and there were upwards of 4,000 now being reported deaths in a day. Obviously, in a country the size of India, there are obviously going to be lots more that go unreported. But the trend of reporting gives us at least the trend might be true rather than the actual numbers on the scale. So then we can think about the UK, where the number of cases of the Delta variant is rising, and rising rather quickly. Of course, the UK is in a different scenario because they have vaccinated the majority of the country with at least one dose of the two-dose regimen and an increasing number of people with two doses. Now, the FTSE 250 has gone sideways for the last 3 months, and it was not quite able to hold on to all of its gain in here today. So I think that there are a couple of different ways that we can think about what's going on in the markets, because I think one of the primary questions that people are asking is, why haven't markets reacted more to this growing body of evidence that the Delta variant is spreading internationally? Well, the first is that India example, that even in a place where there was an uncontrolled spread for a period of time, that the numbers peaked, and the numbers peaked because when there is an uncontrolled spread, people seek to gain control and they start naturally adopting precautionary measures. So they wash their hands more often, they engage in social distancing to whatever degree possible, they wear more masks. So just those actions alone will stop the spread of a respiratory disease. And then the pace of vaccinations picked up as well. In the UK, there's this open question that will people continue to engage in those precautionary measures when such a large percentage of the population have been already inoculated? And then will the Delta variant be held back in terms of the number of deaths because of that large number of people who have been vaccinated, even though the existing vaccines are not as efficacious versus the Delta variant as they were against the Alpha variant, and indeed the original virus itself? They will likely provide at least partial resistance, and we'll find out within the next 2 weeks, because if they don't provide any additional benefit, well then the number of deaths will rise, as there is usually a lag. So then we can think about what's happening in the ASEAN region, because the ASEA ETF broke downwards in here today. Now, it paired the decline towards the end of the day, and it bounced from the region of the trend mean. The Singapore index was also down in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today. But it's probably going to rebound tomorrow. So a large number of the countries within the ASEAN region, whether it's Singapore or Taiwan or Thailand, for example, they came through the pandemic with flying colors. And through their efforts to isolate themselves, and particularly because a number of these places are island nations, they were able to lock themselves off from the rest of the world, then they were able to prosper during 2020. And subsequently now they're seeing that the number of cases of this Delta variant are rising, and there's the fear that because the populations have got a lower penetration of vaccination, that they are more susceptible to the ravages of this disease. What we can also say is that that was equally true of India, and they definitely went through a very difficult 6 weeks, and now they're coming out the other end of it. The reality is that remediation measures are available today that were not available a year ago. So it's unlikely that we're going to see uncontrolled spread across the entire continent. But it does mean that the pace of vaccinations is likely to pick up. And if we get efficacious data coming through from the UK that deaths are not going to increase in line with the number of cases, well then that will further boost demand for vaccines. So Pfizer's vaccine seems to be the one that has got the best record of providing some form of benefit against variants, and the share continues to pause here around the region of the trend mean. Moderna has been touted as one of the other good ones, but it's also got some of the bigger side effects, certainly after the second inoculation, but the share is benefiting from this fear about the spread of the Delta variant. So it has pushed on to new high ground. It had been ranging between December and May, and now we've had a little first step above that range, and it's breaking out, so this does look like an impressive advance. When we think about how international investors are positioning themselves, well, the S&P 500 is still quite steady. We've had an extremely inert few days. It's been up almost every day, but not by very much. And each time it has hit a new high over the course of the last while, that new high has failed. So it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that we do get some pause of consolidation here. But the reality is that these Wall Street indices are pushing new highs, and they are still in consistent trends overall, and the NASDAQ is leading the way higher, and within the NASDAQ it is some of the tech companies and the biotech companies are turning in some of the best performances. So Apple and Baidu were among the top 15 and 16 best performing shares in here today, and then Pinduoduo, which is a Chinese company, is also starting to firm now from the region of the trend mean. So we're increasingly starting to see that a number of the bigger tech companies in China seem to be firming, and Alibaba was up in a dynamic manner last week, and it's firm, at least it's holding on to that advance. So when we think about the Chinext index, well, it was testing the region of its recovery peak yesterday, and we're pausing a little bit in here today, but this continues to look like a recovery candidate overall. We're in the time where the Communist Party in China is celebrating a 100-year anniversary, so they probably want to have a strong stock market heading to celebrate that event, and also to demonstrate faith and the fidelity of the stock market. So the CSI 300 is also steadying now in the region of its trend mean. When we think about Japan, the second section has been a clear lead indicator, but it is now pausing in the region of the all-time peak from early 2018. So we may just get a little bit of a pause here, but this has broken the downward bias, and it's a nice orderly consolidation in the region of the all-time peak. So I think the odds are stacked in favor of the market breaking on the upside over the medium term, but in the short term we may get some pause and consolidation. That brings us to the other market that has been pausing, and gold had pulled back rather sharply in early trading. It paired the decline somewhat, and it does beg the question about what exactly is going on. It's not like governments have stopped printing money, and we still have negative real interest rates. So inflationary pressures are still making headlines, although perhaps not as in as forceful a manner as they were about a month ago. I think one of the factors that's at work here is that there's a lot of talk about Basel III and how that's going to impact the gold market overall. So the initial speculation about Basel III back in 2019 was that gold was going to be reclassified as cash, and that would represent a significant change in terms of capital allocation, and investors would perhaps start holding gold with in the same way that they hold bonds as a steady insurance-like safe haven investment. So we did have a significant bull market from 2019 through to August of 2020. The reason that the LBMA, which is the London Bullion Market Association, and the World Gold Council wrote an open letter to the Bank of International Settlements is because they're worried that the way that Basel III is being implemented does not treat gold as cash, and instead that the way that gold is going to be accounted for will make it more expensive to trade. And they're fearful that by making it more expensive to trade, that some of the dealers will exit the market and take liquidity with them. So then that would make gold a less liquid instrument to trade. Well, if liquidity leaves the market, then that puts downward pressure on the price in the short term. But then when you start to see that there are fewer dealers, and yet you are still dealing with an internationally traded vehicle with unique characteristics where people do have a base level desire to own, then illiquidity, or the inability to create markets faced with the potential for significant additional inflows from investment demand, well, then that pushes prices higher. So in the short term, we have the potential for weakness, but in the medium term, it's likely to create the conditions for strength. And that's, of course, assuming that that particular interpretation of the Basel III rules is in fact correct. But that narrative, at least, gels with the action that we're seeing in gold. Every time the price has got up towards that $1,900 level, it has failed. And every time it has failed, it has come back down and made a new low. So it popped above $1,900 in November and made a new low. It did the same thing again in January and then made a new low. And then it got up again above $1,900 in early June. So if this is still a consistent decline, it will make a new low. And that low would probably be one of those round numbers. So somewhere around 1600 if this trend is going to remain consistent. However, I rather doubt that the price is going to get all the way down to 1600 because we have seen that that trend from the just the pure sing the simplest trend line down from the peak in August has been broken. And we can also think about where are we in this broad cycle? Because governments are not about to stop printing money. And they are clearly intent on attempting to inflate their way out of trouble. But bond yields are continuing to compress. So it suggests that nobody's really worried about inflation in the short term. Well, we had the downward dynamic yesterday in oil prices, and agricultural prices continue to rise, and natural gas prices are still steady, and oil didn't follow through on the downside in here today. So this might be just a pause within the uptrend overall. But one thing for certain is that lumber prices have pulled back in an extremely violent manner. So that should start to feed through into the retail trade and even the commercial trade before long. Certainly, it's the lumber yards have been doing best. There's a friend of mine. Sit on the board of the Nevada Trust Company with him, and he is also on the board of a forestry company. And he was saying that they're not getting any additional money for the trees that they're selling, but that the lumber yards are making all of the money. So that helps to explain why some of the lumber companies did so very well. Now, fear about the rise of the Delta variant and the potential impact, regardless of how short term that is, it might have on the economy, is really one of the reasons why stock markets remain firm, because they're not worried about policy being tightened anytime soon as a result of those actions. So then it's also likely to moderate some of the inflationary pressures in the short term, and that is potentially also why bond yields continue to compress. So we're still in a benign environment overall in terms of liquidity, and that's helping to support markets in the broadest sense of that term. I've posted a video today where one of Tesla's engineers talks about their autonomous driving program, and it's really extraordinarily educative. But one of the clear takeaways is that they've basically thrown out their radar from the cars. The new production models no longer include radar, and they are concentrating 100% on machine learning and just video cameras. So that means that they need graphics cards. They need chips, basically, that are good at interpreting visual data or graphic data, and that's basically what NVIDIA does. So the advances that Tesla are making in their vision, their computer vision program, is helping to support demand for NVIDIA. So Tesla's stock is steadying in the region of the trend mean. Now, when we think about the number of cars that they sell and the increasing competition that they have in selling carbon credits, then it's reasonable to anticipate that the valuation, with an estimated PE for the end of this year of 150, well, that pretty much implies that they're going to be successful in developing autonomous vehicles. If they aren't, in fact, able to deliver an autonomous vehicle, and they can simply roll that software out to existing cars, well, that will be an enormous benefit, and they will certainly be able to justify their premium. Why on earth wouldn't anyone buy a Tesla with autonomous capabilities if it was in fact able to deliver that? So it obviously is something that is already priced into the share with a market cap of $655 billion. Of course, if it fails, well, then the company is going to decline significantly, but they are certainly making strides in computer vision and interpretation of visual data that suggest that they're well on the way to, in fact, delivering that kind of innovation. But they're using one of the five fastest supercomputers in the world to do the calculations. So this investment in machine learning and supercomputers, well, it's absolutely necessary to deliver what is probably one of the most challenging problems that any company has in the private sector has taken up on its own. And of course, that's another part of the reason why the Nasdaq continues to push onwards. There is innovation that is close to being delivered, and the stock market is pricing in that potential, and bond yields are compressing. So you have two sides of this equation. Some people like to just simply depend 100% on the excitement of exponential growth, and then others are more skeptical and are thinking that it might just be a product of low interest rates. Well, there's no question that investing in blue sky technological innovation makes sense when interest rates are zero. And it becomes a more difficult prospect when interest rates rise. So right now we have interest rates coming down, and we have these exciting technological innovations occurring, and that suggests that there's still ample potential for upside for the Nasdaq. And against all of that background, the dollar remains reasonably steady. And it was in positive territory today, and it is firming from the region of the trend mean. Now, it might simply be doing this as a short-term move in response to the growing threat from the short-term growing threat of the Delta variant in Asia and the demand for the dollar as a result of the how far along the USA is in terms of its vaccination program. That might certainly add a short-term tailwind, but ultimately, when we think about the quantity of money that is being expended and the difficulty of withdrawing that stimulus, then the potential here is that the dollar will eventually trend lower. But that's a theory, and the price action is supportive of additional upside. When we look at some of the agricultural commodities, the coffee price was up in a dynamic manner yesterday. It didn't quite hold on to all of that advance in here today, but it closed well off its low. So we are getting a little pause in the agricultural commodities, but certainly this looks like a bullish environment overall. And when we think about it in terms of this longer term chart, well, it's a clear base formation completion, and this looks like a first step above the base in Arabica coffee. When we then think about the lean hogs market, well, prices have come down in a rather dynamic manner over the course of the last couple of weeks. China has basically rebuilt its swine herd, and now the price has been consolidating. Now it's right in the region of the upper side of the base formation and the psychological $100 area, and we are starting to see some support coming through. So this may turn into a consolidation overall, but generally, commodities remain firm, and the industrial resources are simply pausing. The one thing we can be certain of is, regardless of what the pandemic news is, governments are extremely eager to get people back to work, and the easy way to do that is infrastructure projects. So it's relatively certain that we're going to have additional demand for industrial resources. And as long as bond yields are compressing, then it gives a tailwind to risk assets overall. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.